This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia. Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to
the main topic in the margin of a book.
Peter Heller's novel, Celine, is a book about a private eye who is anything but typical. She's 68 years old, part of the New York aristocracy, is highly educated, and her petite and sophisticated form can barely peer over a steering wheel. And she's not entirely fictional. Celine is very much based on Peter Heller's own mother. The book was recently released in paperback, and I caught up with Heller to visit about the book, his mother, the writing process, and what's next. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. Your book, Celine, was just released in paperback a few weeks ago, and it's the story of a 68-year-old private investigator with an Ivy League education, but perhaps something a little bit more to her education. Can you describe Celine to me and her typical line of work?
So Celine was born in Paris right before World War II, and she was born to American parents. Her father was a banker. He worked for Morgan's, and she had two sisters born there also. The Germans marched on Paris. Celine was seven, and her dad sent her sisters and her mom back to the States. They fled Paris and took an ocean liner back to New York, and her mom said that Celine, when she was, you know, seven and eight, all she wanted to do was return to France and fight in the French resistance. So she had this special ops bent as a young girl. She would go around Manhattan and listen to groups of people talking and try to decide who was a Nazi spy. She grew up, went to a good school, studied art. She was a wonderful artist, got married pretty soon after college, the way a lot of folks in her generation did, and began raising children. But she also started to work for a detective agency, and she got her private eye license, her PI license, and almost immediately she was contacted by the FBI. They needed help in finding someone who had perpetrated a large bank fraud on the Bank of New York, and they didn't have a special agent who could mingle with the silk stocking set in Old Greenwich. So somehow they heard about Celine, and they contacted her. She found the guy in two phone calls, drove up to Greenwich, Connecticut, in her old Volvo, spied on him with her opera glasses, had a car chase when he left his horse property through Southern Connecticut. And finally, this guy was so intrigued by this old Volvo stuck on him. Like, you know, who is this little woman who could barely see over the steering wheel? He pulled over. Celine gets out. Click, 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 go the pump on the pavement. And she comes to the car and says, "Franklin, what you're doing is wrong. It's not good for you. It's not good for your family. You got to make this right. And so what we're going to do is I'm going to follow you back to your house, and we'll get in my car. We'll go back down to New York, and we'll go to the bank and settle this thing." And he did. And that was her first case. And I don't know if I should say right now, but Celine is based very closely on my mom. And all of that history I just told you actually is her history. And that was actually my mother's first case as a PI.
You know, I thought I had read that somewhere, that it was either based on your mother or your grandmother. But in doing my, you know, preparing my questions, I couldn't find that information again. So I'm glad to know that that was actually the case. Your story of Celine, this fictional story, was interwoven with a little bit of her backstory. And it explained a little bit about, you know, that was the last case she did for the FBI, right? And then she started reuniting families with each other, either children who had been given up for adoption, reuniting them with parents, or parents trying to find children they had given up. Is that right?
Yeah, because both mom and Celine, you know, when the agents put the handcuffs on this guy, she said she never wanted to see that face again. It was so heartbreaking. And she realized it really wasn't her job to be an angel of justice. That's not what she wanted to do. So she turned her prodigious investigative skills towards reuniting birth families. And so just as you said, you know, if you were a 15-year-old girl and you had a child, maybe you were into drugs or whatever, and the state took it away from you, and 20 years later you wanted to find your child, or the child wanted to find you, that's what Celine and my mom did. And, you know, these are cold cases, often, you know, 20 plus years old, sealed records, often wrong information. And, you know, she over Celine / mom found, you know, reunited over 100 birth families.
But in this story, Celine takes a case. She's contacted by a young woman in her early 40s, if I remember right. They had both gone to Sarah Lawrence. And this young woman's father had disappeared some 20 years prior. It was presumed that he had been killed by a bear in Wyoming, just outside of Yellowstone Park. But she was beginning to wonder if that was truly the case.
Yeah, and that's complete fiction. So here we go. I mean, now we're in the territory of fiction. Yeah, it was just over the border. It was, you know, just into Montana where the guy disappeared and they found, you know, evidence of bear mauling. He was a National Geographic photographer. He'd been sent there to do a story on grizzly bears to photograph them. And there's this supposed mauling, but the daughter thinks that the evidence doesn't add up, but it doesn't. She never really believed that her father had died. And so she comes to Celine, who she'd read about in the alumni magazine of Sarah Lawrence, you know, as an article about the Prada PI. And Celine on the phone said, well, that was ridiculous. I never wore Prada in my life. And the young woman said, well, that's because Chanel doesn't alliterate. So she takes the case, though she's feeling sort of exhausted and frail. She suffers from emphysema. In the past year, she had just lost both her sisters. So she's in a, you know, sort of a vulnerable, frail state in her life. But the story is so compelling, she decides to take it. And she enlists her Watson, who is her husband, this guy, Pete Beveridge, who, you know, they're an investigative team. And they come west.
And you say that this is where the fiction begins, but you have a lot of background with the lay of the land. You've worked with National Geographic or for National Geographic. And so it might be fiction where your mom lets off, but how much of that was, you know, part of your true experience?
Yeah, yeah, good question. Because, you know, I spent so much time in the mountains of the West and on rivers. And for many years, that's how I made a living. I wrote for magazines and I wrote stories about expeditions and environmental stories. And I was outside a lot, all over this country. And, you know, Yellowstone, when I was there, made a big impression on me, and as did many parts of Wyoming, many of the mountains in Wyoming. And so, you know, they had to inform this book. And Celine and Pete, they come to Denver and they pick up a camper from Celine's son, Hank. And Hank happens to live on a lake on the west side of Denver, just as I do. And his truck is the same truck, and the camper is the exact same camper. And so is the hunting rifle that Celine decides to borrow. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, sort of autobiography in here. And it's fun to, you know, mix the fiction with the nonfiction. You know, it keeps me on my toes, and I think it keeps the readers on their toes too, especially the ones that know me.
Now, Celine is not a typical mystery novel. Your characters, you know, when debunking the idea of serial killing bears, make observations like human beings, by order of magnitude, remain the most vicious animals on the planet. Or you describe a tracker as pixeled. Or your narrator describes harbor sounds as the perpetual angelus of the bell buoy in the channel. And observed that where there was the love between mothers and fathers and children, there would be no peace. Can you see that this is different than a typical mystery novel, that the words are just a little bit more rich and literary?
Well, you know, I mean, I write literary fiction, I guess, you know, and this happens to be about a private eye. So, you know, it slots into the genre of detective and crime fiction. But, you know, I mean, I came up as a poet, and in the books, you know, I'm less interested, frankly, in the story or the plot, which I never outline or plan out. I just follow the characters. So I'm less interested in the story than the music of the language, than, you know, the figures of speech and the richness of the writing. That's what I love to do. And so, you know, if it does come off as lyrical sometimes or rich in a literary way, then that's, you know, that's great.
Well, and the structure of the book was even a little bit different. I mean, it doesn't just follow the story and have the plot and the dialogue, you know, each paragraph was perhaps one person either thinking or remembering or talking. And I mean, it was very smooth. It moved along and it pulled you, you know, it took you back where it needed to, and it brought you back to the present where it needed to. And I mean, it was not typical, but that doesn't mean that it was bad. It was really well done.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Now, when you look at a copy of Celine, you know, also noted are your other works of fiction, The Painter and The Dog Stars. But there are also four other works of nonfiction and memoir listed among your title page. How do you decide what your next project is going to be?
Well, so in 2011, I guess it was, I decided that after years of writing for magazines and having nonfiction books that came out of those stories, you know, I wrote a book about Sea Shepherd, which had been an article for National Geographic Adventure, and, you know, those are the guys that were in Whale Wars. The book is called Whale Warriors. They're the ones that, you know, go down in an all-black pirate ship, an eco-pirate ship, and harass the Japanese whaling fleet and try and stop them from whaling. I wrote a book about those guys. I wrote a book about a memoir about learning to surf down the coast of Mexico, which is also a love story. And those books sort of sprang out of this career as an adventure and environmental journalist. And the whole time I was doing that, I had to make a living, and I loved it. I loved doing those stories because I was paddling rivers around the world on expeditions and meeting people who were doing great things with environmental work. And, you know, it was joyful, inspiring work, and it was great training. But the whole time I was doing it, I was hoping that one day I could sit down a clear enough space where I didn't have to take a story and write the novel that I'd always wanted to write. Because coming up, you know, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to write poetry and I wanted to write fiction. And I did, you know, for years and years. I just, you know, I did lots of different jobs, and I wrote poems in my room and short stories. And so, you know, finally having the time out ahead, thinking, you know, I have 9 months here. I can probably sit down and write a novel without taking a magazine story. That was like coming home. You know, it wasn't like a leap. And I went to my coffee shop and I sat down and I wrote, I keep the beast running. I keep the low lead on tap. I foresee attacks. A few lines later, my name is Hig, one name, Big Hig, if you need another. If I ever woke up crying in the middle of a dream, and I'm not saying I did, because the trout are gone, every one. And as soon as he said that, I just sort of sat up and I said to myself, you know, I'm listening, you know, speak. And I went into the coffee shop every day on that first novel for 7 months and sat down and said to myself, don't think, just listen. And it was as if Hig was sitting across a campfire from me with a, you know, on an October night with the wind blowing the flames around and telling me what had happened to him a couple of years before. You know, it was first person and it was thrilling. I would go in and I would never know what was going to happen next. I would laugh out loud. I'd have, you know, tears streaming off my chin on the table. And I know other people in the coffee shop were probably thinking that, you know, poor son of a gun, he's probably going through a bad divorce or whatever. But it was the most thrilling thing I'd ever experienced in all that travel and all that adventure. And once I did that, you know, I just wanted to do it again. And, I wrote The Painter almost immediately after finishing that book and wrote Celine fairly quickly after that. And, you know, I just finished another novel that I wrote, you know, in 5 months in a white heat. And once I had come home to giving complete free rein to the imagination and to making it all up, and to giving free rein to the language or the music of the language, it's, I just didn't want to go back. You know, I think, you know, if I do write nonfiction again, it's because there's some story that absolutely has to be told. And I'll take the time and the energy, carve it out to write it. But as I see right now, you know, it's just so wonderful to walk into a territory, into a fictional landscape, you know, where I have never been, and, you know, follow the characters into that country and follow what happens to them and and how they deal and how they grow. And I absolutely, you know, I adore it. I love it.
I was going to ask you if you have to prepare differently for writing fiction versus nonfiction, but I think you just answered my question.
Yeah, I think writing the nonfiction was, you know, I have to say it was great training. It was, you know, it was all preparation, because when I wrote adventure stories about some expeditions that I was on, I learned how to evoke a sense of place very quickly. I mean, I learned that that's where you want the reader to be right away, immersed in a place where they're transported away from their normal life. And so the reader feels like they're there, really feel like they're there, and can forget the rest of the world. And you can take their hand then and lead them into the story. And I learned how to paint characters that, you know, jumped off the page, that were living. And, you know, to do that very quickly in a magazine story, you have to do that fast. And I learned how to pace the story so that people were compelled to keep coming into that country with me, keep turning the pages. And I think all that was great training for writing fiction. You know, how couldn't it be?
Celine, it's a mystery novel, and it's a book that could stand on its own, but you also leave the reader wanting more, and we could learn more in a sequel. Do you have plans for a sequel, or is it going to be a standalone book?
Right. I never plan a sequel. I've been asked that about The Dog Stars, too, and The Painter kind of has an open ending, and I actually got cornered at a couple of book festivals. One woman actually grabbed my collar and shook me and said, "You have to write a sequel to Celine. You know, we have to know." And so, you know, there is clearly an appetite among the readers, but I just have to follow my nose. And if Celine begins to speak again, and if her stories begin to speak again, I surely will. I mean, I partly wrote the book. You know, my mom died 3 years ago, and I think I wrote the book so that I could hang out with her for the better part of another year. And it was so fun. It was so fun to be with her for that time that I was writing, you know, to be that close. And it was so fun to be with her and her husband, Pete, who is as written in the book. I didn't even change his name. You know, he's the seventh generation Mainer who's extremely smart and doesn't say much. You know, reticence is sort of the state bird in Maine. The family calls him the quiet American. And so they're kind of like good cop, bad cop, but they're, you know, the cop who doesn't say anything and then the cop who talks. But it was so fun being with those guys as they went on a case and just being with my mom again that I sort of can't see that I wouldn't write another book about her.
Now, we've talked about an awful lot, trying not to give too much away, but is there anything you want to talk about that I haven't asked?
No, I guess I should just say that I'm very excited about the book that I just finished. It's called The River, and it'll be out with Knopf next January. And I really, really love the book. It's two college-age boys in a canoe way up in northern Canada, in northern Ontario, on a long river trip near Hudson Bay, a river that flows into Hudson Bay. And it's very lyrical, and it's a page-turner. And you know, I just really love the book, so I'm excited about that.
That was Peter Heller, author of the book Celine, which was published by Vintage. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. Discover new episodes at kmuw.org or on iTunes. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita. Our editor is Luann Stevens. Our engineer is John Cyphers, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.